Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, and I can't believe I'm saying this, the fourth day of November, Anno Domini 2023, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Chris Horn.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, not to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Did you pay your dues? Here comes the news.
But what we should first mention, that the pledge drive is over. So you folks that didn't bother to call in and pledge, it's safe for you now.
Yeah, you don't have to be afraid anymore.
But, you folks can still go to the webpage and sign up to put in a pledge. There is never a time that, there's not the icon there that you can't sign up and become a member.
It's just the big red donate now button. It's really hard to miss.
And you still get benefits for being a member. Just because the pledge drive's done, Rob just does it. Oh, well, too bad. No, they still provide gifts and the meal card and everything else that you can get the 2-for-1 and everything else and save you some money.
Yep. We should also mention that, yes, Steve is one step ahead of the law, somewhere in the Southwest. Uh-huh. he's running with the hole in the head gang. Oh. And Chris has graciously consented to come in and take his, not take his place, but stand in his stead.
Stand in. One other thing we got to mention, because they still refuse to do anything about it, is don't forget, tonight before you go to bed, turn the clocks back 1 hour. It's fall, daylight savings time. We have to fall back. So reset those clocks, because otherwise, if you're getting up and going to church, you're going to get there a little early, like an hour early.
You get an extra hour of sleep. Why would you not like this time of year?
Exactly.
Yep. It's spring that's a pain in the neck.
Mm-hmm. So take advantage of it and enjoy it.
It's only a hassle if you've got kids or pets that are not really fans of changing the schedule.
Well, exactly. Yeah, well, yeah, our all over the decades, our cats and dogs just never got it.
Yeah.
All right. On Monday, I know none of you know this, but on Monday, Apple held a semi-surprise Scary Fast event. The Scary Fast part, as expected, refers to the new M3 chips. Apple has announced the M3, the M3 Pro, and the M3 Max, which will be included in Apple's new 24-inch iMac and MacBook Pros. This time around, Apple has placed emphasis on graphical horsepower with hardware-accelerated ray tracing, mesh shading, and dynamic caching, which Apple claims dramatically increases the average utilization of the GPU by allotting the exact amount of local memory to given tasks. These new chips were frequently benchmarked against their M1 predecessor, with Apple claiming the M3 renders at 2.5 times the speed of the M1, and its CPU is 30% faster than the M1, which doesn't say much about the M2, but I'm assuming that's because the M2 is just faster and therefore not as impressive to say it's like 15% faster rather than 30% faster. Yes, the new 14 and 16-inch MacBook Pros come with upgraded internals, but the first thing you might notice is the new color, space black. Beneath that color, you'll find the new line of M3 chips. It's really kind of a steel gray. At least that's the way it looked on my monitor. Beneath that color, you'll find the new line of M3 chips. The 14-inch MacBook Pro can contain any of the trio, while the 16-inch model will only come with the M3 Pro or M3 Max chips. The M3 chips packed into both models are putting an emphasis on getting the most out of the new GPU, though Apple also boasts that both form factors' battery can last 22 hours on a single charge. What, they don't last 24 hours? Look.
Build a bridge, get over it.
Exactly. Apple's iMac line is getting a colorful refresh with an added M3 chip to add horsepower to the palette change. Apple is sticking with the 24-inch form factor and upgrading the screen with a 4.5K Retina display, 1080p FaceTime camera, and a six-speaker system supporting Dolby Atmos and spatial audio. The new iMac will be available in green, yellow, orange, pink, purple, blue, and silver. The new, but not space black.
No purple?
No. Yeah, purple.
Oh.
Yeah, purple. The new line of MacBook Pros marks the end of the Touch Bar, which never really found its footing. The announcement of the new 14-inch MacBook Pro effectively replaces the 13-inch MacBook Pro, the last Apple product to carry the Touch Bar keyboard, after the company released the 14 and 16-inch MacBook Pros in 2021 without it. You may not have noticed, but at the end of the event, Apple dropped a quick note on the screen. This event was shot on iPhone and edited on Mac. It's a pretty impressive flex for Apple to shoot its half-hour hardware showcase entirely on a phone, well, with the help of thousands of dollars worth of ancillary equipment like Steadicam, gimbals, and high-end drones. Apple posted a video after the reveal solely about its production process for the October event. Though our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Scary Fast Max. And your choices are, gotta have them all, I'll get one, I'll look at them, meh, and Mac what now? So far, we've got 28 votes, and Mac what now has approximately half of them, followed by meh. But two people have said they'll look at them. One says gotta have them all, so we'll see. You can vote in the poll at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415. I got to say, I was intrigued by what they showed. I think there's this whole, how do I put this? It wasn't really a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody already knew pretty much what they were going to talk about, but it was very nice to see the new chips. Of course, immediately we started seeing, that was boring. That was dull. Again, it's evolutionary, really? Not revolutionary.
Yeah.
You know, there's only so much you can say, you know, here's a brand new wow thing. There are only so many times you can actually create an iPod. You know, for the rest of the time, you're going to be standing on the shoulders of giants, and that's how that works.
Well, it's like
even
right
if
now,
they're your own shoulders, I guess.
With their new phone, you know, they're sitting there. The big thing that they're talking about is that it's titanium. Look of it is titanium.
I mean, how many times? And it's not
still
just
a phone.
Apple, right? It's not just Apple. It's every manufacturer, mm-hmm. every
trying
thing.
To find a hook.
How many times can you say? It's a little faster, it's got a little more memory, and it's a little more expensive. I mean, that's pretty much everything.
Yeah.
Until, you know, we have, I don't know what, atomic power in your laptop. Until then, we
nitrogen
pretty much,
cooling unit.
Nitrogen cooling. Mr. Fusion
yeah.
up to the back of your laptop. Until we have that, it's all going to be incremental. Get over yourself.
Yeah,
it's that simple. But yeah, it was a really nice event. They did a good job at it. What I really liked was that it was produced. It was clearly not live.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
you know they had produced it and cut out all the ums and uhs and you know gone through it and did a really
made it
nice
look professional.
Job. It really looked professional. We often see these things done live. And
they're going by the seat of their pants.
They're not actors.
We think it can do this, and yeah.
So they're not actors. They don't normally memorize lines and stand in front of people and spout them off with ease and conviction. So this one, I thought it went really well, and I thought it was a really nice. So yeah. All right, we should probably get to the phones. Our first caller is Brian from Rochester, New York. Hi, Brian, what's up?
Well, I have a couple of questions all concerning the use of Mint and trying to download some things.
Okay.
Basically, I've been told I should probably add PIP to my Mint situation. of which I went to the site, and they tell you nothing about where to download it and to install it. However, I also have a problem trying to install NumPy in Python. And the rejections I get or the errors I get state that they can't find it, and secondly, that it has a number of dependencies. And I'm also trying to download and install Octave.
Sorry, what was the last
Octave.
One?
Octave.
Octave.
Yes.
Okay.
Thoughts on what could be going on here?
He's looking right now.
Okay.
Yeah, basically, okay, so PIP, and I forget what it stands for, and it really doesn't matter. PIP is the program that you use to install stuff into Python.
Right.
So when you install Python, it automatically installs PIP.
Really?
So you can't really get Python without PIP.
It's a package deal.
It's a package deal. So it's essentially the package manager for Python, like you have the deb package manager or the apt package manager or, you know, whatever for Linux itself. PIP is essentially the thing with which you install modules into Python.
Right.
So if you have Python, you have PIP.
I've got Python 3.
Yep.
Then they may call it PIP 3.
Actually, it might not be installed, Brian, on Ubuntu. And I, as a developer, this is the thing I've had to do a bunch of times.
Okay.
Interesting.
The Ubuntu or Debian and Mint is a flavor of Ubuntu. There's a package called Python-pip. And you'll get that if you install Python-dev. Now, doing development with your system Python is also what we would normally call an anti-pattern. You're better off using a local development version manager for your programming language. And that is definitely a whole thing to do. And there's a bunch of them. There's one called ASDF. If you search for ASDF-VM,
okay.
It's a package manager that you install, and it'll let you install Python or whatever other language and lock it to a specific version. Because otherwise, when your system updates, all your Python stuff is going to update too. And like, what if there's a bug or there's a change and all of a sudden your software changes? So just like you practice the same way you deliver.
Okay.
So you lock all the versions of the stuff for development, and then when you put it into production, it's all the same.
What are you planning on doing with Python?
Actually, I wanted to add NumPy in there because I want to work with some large matrices.
Right.
For experimentation, I would just apt install Python-pip or maybe Python 3-pip. I think the default now is Python 3.
Probably do a Google search of pull it up.
The problem with the Google search is that all that stuff is out of date. And the only answer that really matters is what Mint tells you.
Well, I mean to see whether there's a Python-pip or the
Python 3-pip.
Mint will tell you that. Mint will tell you that for sure.
Python 3-pip.
Yeah.
Now, that's interesting because I'm pretty sure it was installed on my machines because I don't remember ever installing
Python.
It.
It might be a dependency if you, on Ubuntu, again, this is, if you install the build-essential virtual package, probably get all that stuff.
Maybe. So, if you do have to install it, you can install it by doing apt install Python 3-pip.
Okay.
And that will install pip, and then pip. That's a good point. The real problem that I have.
Is it me?
Is Chris. Really, that's my biggest problem. But there's another problem I have, which is that Ubuntu in particular seems to prefer to load some things with apt and some things through pip. Now, there is, and I'm looking to see if there's a numpy.
I'm sure there's a NumPy package
for it. There isn't a numpy. Well, hold on.
So the command you want to try is apt-cache search. So apt-cache space search space NumPy, and you'll figure out exactly what the package is.
Yep. Python 3-NumPy.
Yeah.
There's also a...
I would say just install the packages and experiment that way. And if you want to do something newer or where you're actually going to deliver the software or something like that, then look into a version manager like ASDF. There's a bunch of them for Python. There's PyENV.
That's ASDF.
Yep.
-VM.
Yep. Just like on your keyboard, ASDF.
VM is in virtual machine.
Wordy.
Okay. Okay. Is there a special website to go to or just bring it up?
It's actually distributed through GitHub, as far as I remember, and the VM is for version manager, which I love when we reuse the same acronyms to mean different things.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. No, I don't love that.
Okay. That sounds like a plan. Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
You're welcome.
There you go. Thanks. Interesting. Python 3-ASDF. That's a different ASDF. That's the Advanced Scientific Data Format. You're right. They've reused the acronym for different things.
Yeah, and I'm starting to see more and more advertising. They're trying to push out the books and all that for folks to learn Python.
Python is an interesting...
Is it like Pascal at all, or, you know, where it's a top-down?
It's object-oriented.
It's object-oriented. Okay. It can be, at least.
if you're doing it right, it is.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's been decades since I programmed. I mean, you know, that's going back to my old Kodak days.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, with the, you know, Fortran and PL1. And, like, you know, all those, it's like... As a matter of fact, I can still remember the days when we were doing punch cards at Kodak.
Yeah.
To load the run, you know, this... Back in the day, we had down in this one lab where these three machines would sit there and read these film strips, and they would generate punch cards. And they'd take this whole stack of punch cards. They were trying to be very careful not to mess them up and get them out of order, because... With, like, colored strips, there was three layers, the cyan, magenta, and yellow. And they had to have all three cards because it would make three passes, cyan, magenta, and yellow. And you had to keep them in order.
Right. Because
if it didn't, that curve, once it generated the curves, once you took the cards up, looked funny as all hell.
A friend of mine worked at the computing center for the U of R. You know, he was one of the monkeys that... handed people cards and stacks of paper for the printouts and all of that stuff behind the desk.
Oh, I did that.
Yeah, yeah. And he had a box of punch cards that was old and useless. And every once in a while, he'd bring that up to somebody and then drop it.
Oh, jeez.
Just to watch their faces. I said, you're going to kill somebody.
Yeah.
You're going to give somebody a heart attack. Because, particularly at the end of the semester, that is not the time to screw around.
Especially, yeah, and these poor kids have been doing, you know, maybe an all-nighter trying to write their code, get it all ready to be punched.
That's right.
And then, you know, the cards get scrambled all over the place.
At Y2K, yes, I'm old. At Y2K, I was working at a bank, and we had one program that nobody had the source code to. Nobody had any of the information for. And then we found the original punch cards. We didn't have a punch card reader.
Oh, no.
I remembered that we had grabbed an old punch card reader and given it to my boss as a joke on some anniversary, you know, 30 years of the bank or whatever the number was. But we had, you know, glittered it up and put wrapping on it and all this other stuff. So I ran up to his office, broke in, grabbed this thing off the shelf. We scrubbed it down, ripped stuff up, ran it. It ran the thing once.
That's all you need.
At the very last card, it died. It spit out the last card and then just borked. But we got it.
The last gasp.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Hey.
It read everything. We got the program in, the source code in. We could deal with it. It was.
That's like a.
It was hysterical.
Yeah. A Y2K cautionary tale.
Yeah. Yeah. You really. There's just, you have to keep working at it. You just have to keep working at it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Peachy. How are you?
I'm peachy also. I think green light is really making an impact on local internet.
Yeah, I think it is too.
Because I just heard the word that the standard speed for Spectrum is going to go up to 500.
Yep.
And then eventually it's going to be symmetrical.
Yep.
Yep.
I've already got 500, but I'm not symmetrical yet. But I guess until they get more money, they're slowly doing this.
Well, I get calls all the time. And I'm sure, and I know Dave has, and I know Chris probably has as well, and 100 other people. We get these calls that say, we've got a great deal for not green light internet, and it will cost you $49.99. For 300 megabits. My response is, I'm paying $50 straight for 500 megabits. Why would I pay the same amount for less?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
At some point,
down.
Yeah. At some point, somebody has got to say, we better up our game.
Competition is good.
Competition is good.
Well, especially now with the phone company coming across with their fiber.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're, you know, back when, you know, they had DSL and it was considered slow and everything, and Spectrum blew them out of the water. Well, now they're back and they're with fiber, and they're doing it a little bit cheaper than Spectrum and offering all different price plans at a decent price.
Yep. Well,
I think that's the thing, right? Is it DOCSIS 5?
Yeah.
Is potentially a 5 gigabit symmetric service. Now, whether or not Spectrum chooses to make that available in our area
is
another question. But
right.
I think that's the promise of DOCSIS 5, still over that same coax cable,
right?
Which I think is pretty amazing.
Well, and did you hear the second thing that Spectrum's doing? Any new customers are really talked away from, they're not going to really give them equipment for TV. They're doing that new Zumo box.
And yeah, I've heard of, what's the name of that box again?
Zumo. It's named after the streaming service that Xfinity does.
Yeah.
So they went into a deal with Xfinity with this new streaming box. It looks like a Roku, you know, kind of the big box. And they're telling them to stream. They're only going to do streaming for new customers. No more video equipment.
Yeah, I could see that. It's inefficient for them to maintain the two wildly different kinds of technology. Why not just do everything like it's an internet connection?
Well, let's face it. The cable service stinks. The picture is constantly going in and out. You go to tune a channel in, it's blank. They tell you they don't know why it does it.
Right.
You know, too many problems.
In addition, there's the... Oh, that's not going to work. Okay. Listen, I'm sorry. We got to take a break.
Thank you. We'll talk to you later.
Yep. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Chris Horn, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. Nope. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
Oh, and I think I'm Chris Horn.
Well, you were a moment ago, and maybe you still are. And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And Steve Ray is sitting in the...
The virtual seat.
The virtual seat. with the Apple campus behind him?
Furiously barking instructions at me to plug stuff in.
Yeah, I think, but I think we're up, which means we're on what? YouTube and stuff, or are we just on, where are we?
We're streaming to the universe.
Streaming to the universe on Jazz 90.1. That's exactly right.
We have lofty goals.
Lofty goals. We are streaming to the universe. This stuff goes out over the radio, and radio signals go out into space. Somewhere, 33 light years away, is our first show. If you think about it, still wandering off into the universe. All right, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415. And that will also get you streaming out into the universe. Microsoft, in the meantime, I'll read a new news item. Microsoft released the new Windows 11 23H2 feature update on Tuesday. And it comes with a ton of new features that make Windows 10 holdouts maybe willing to upgrade. While these features have already been released as part of the recent Windows 11 22H2 Moment 4 update, for those upgrading from Windows 10, they will get to enjoy all the new features in this update as well. Microsoft has unveiled the Windows Copilot, their AI assistant. Everybody is, AI is in everything now. It combines Bing Chat and additional plugins to assist users in various tasks via the Copilot sidebar. Activating Windows Copilot is a straightforward process located on the taskbar. The sidebar is present across all Windows programs and apps. Some people will love that Copilot can rewrite, summarize, or explain content they've copied and pasted. Otherwise, we'll find it an annoying nuisance. Your mileage may vary.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and it integrates Bing Chat. However, the combination of Bing and ChatGPT plugins in Windows Copilot, at least in the initial preview, have not, let's just say, met expectations. The revamped File Explorer, powered by Windows App SDK and designed with WinUI, presents a modernized home interface. Again, some people will love it, others will hate the change. The new address bar differentiates between local and cloud folders and features integrated status icons. For OneDrive users, sync status and quota flyouts are now readily visible on the address bar. Microsoft is also introducing a revamped details pane in File Explorer, which is available via the Alt-Shift-P. It is designed to display relevant file information and allow collaboration without the need to open files. When a file is selected and the pane enabled, users will see a thumbnail, share status, activity, related files and emails, and more. The new pane can be toggled on or off via the View menu and an accessible button on the command bar. Excuse me. Dynamic lighting provides users and developers with native control of lighting devices, implementing the Open HID Lamp Array standard, whatever that may be, assuming you have any. The new feature also includes APIs for Windows apps to control devices from the foreground or background and a custom settings page for users. Microsoft is on a mission, just like everybody else, to make passwords a thing of the past. They're rolling out improved passkey experiences where you can create and sign in using passkeys with the Windows Hello native experience for any app or website that supports them. Windows 11 also allows you to manage passkeys saved to your Windows device, giving you control to view and delete any passkey from the device. There are a bunch of other incremental enhancements, a number of which will be useful for businesses more than home users. Your IT people are likely drooling over them already. Are you convinced to finally go to Windows 11? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415.
In case they didn't catch it.
Yeah.
Just my opinion.
I am interested to see what Microsoft does with Windows 11 once they start shipping hardware with their own CPU, just like the Mac has done. Right? The consumers, most people would never know or care or see the benefits to the security of the M1 chip
right. In
the new Macs and devices. And I'm hoping that Microsoft can do the same thing with their own hardware, which is, I guess, a knock against Intel, but...
Well, Intel's got a problem. I mean, if you look at the M1
yep.
and you look at the Tensor from Google and you look at what Microsoft is doing now, AMD is kicking them as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Intel's got an issue. You know, people are down to 2, 3, 4 nanometers, and they're super fast chips, and they're purpose built chips, and the RISC chips, which have been around for decades, are finally getting their day in court.
Well, it's because they've put specific features into hardware,
right,
that they've wanted that they couldn't get from Intel.
Right, and Intel made and makes general purpose chips.
Yeah,
which was always their bread and butter, but nobody uses general purpose chips anymore. They want purpose built.
Yeah.
Chips specifically for a thing.
I have a prediction.
Uh-oh, here we go. You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen.
So just like we have video cards with a GPU, I think you're going to have another chip in your computer that is specifically for doing the AI types of computation.
NVIDIA is already jumping in on
that.
They
have it, but not at the consumer level.
Right.
It's not a standard thing.
Like anything else, just wait. Because, yeah, you know, it's not going to take long. The way AI has just jumped so far ahead than everybody thought it would. I mean, this thing has just taken off like a rocket.
Well, it's the new catchphrase,
but
right?
It's got a lot of people frightened too, of, you know, because like anything else, just like the computer, it has its good side,
yep,
and it has its bad side,
yep.
And the problem is, are too many people are pointing out the bad side and what it can be used for, you know, instead of promoting how it could be so helpful. They're just showing the bad side of it,
right?
And highlighting that, and we need to tone that down. It's my opinion.
And there are issues with it, but they'll work on them.
Yep.
We'll see. Brave, the Brave browser, which is designed specifically to be secure and private and yada, 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 also now has their own, I think it's called Leo, their own chat GPT product.
Yeah.
We're seeing them everywhere.
The whole problem, though, going back to the Windows 11 and that, you know, and doing the upgrade and that, my biggest fear, just like everything else with Windows, they sit there and roll stuff out, get people all psyched about it, doing stuff. It messes up and they go, oh, well, maybe we'll just discontinue that.
Yeah.
And they do.
Well,
and
everybody
they leave
does
people
it
hanging, and it's like, oh, well, sorry.
And listen, if you are going to upgrade your system, back everything up twice.
At least.
And verify that backup. Make sure you got a good backup. I can't. Steve and I both have multiple horror stories. People who thought they were backing stuff up.
Yeah.
And never were.
And the thing that is don't worry about the programs. Make a list of the programs that you have installed, because if you're going to do a new install, you want to install everything fresh. If you slipped and didn't get everything out of a particular program,
right,
thinking, this one will be okay, it could have hidden time bombs in it that would release once you put it back on there. So back up your documents and your photos. Those are the two critical things that I know Steve and I run into all the time, people crying, well, I needed this document or that photo, but they're gone. Back those up at least 3 times, especially the photos, folks. Documents, it might be a pain in the butt that you got to recreate those, but at least those can be recreated.
Right.
The photos, ain't happening unless you can go back in time that I'm unaware of.
Yep. I just got a new phone, and the first thing I did was make sure that it was backing up my pictures both to Google and to Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
So I have them in 2 separate places. And the second thing I did was make sure it connected to my computer so I could pull all the photos onto my computer as well.
Yep.
There's just, you can't, look, I did system administration for decades. And I will tell you the number one rule. You don't have enough backups. I don't care how many backups you have. You don't have enough. So when you have a backup, make sure it works.
Test it out once in a while because, you know, exactly. You can have it, the backup. And, okay, well, yeah, I set it all up and, yeah, I was doing it then. Periodically, try to restore a document or that. You know, go over to this one, say when it goes to, you know, restore it, you can tell it to put it somewhere else. Create a junk folder and just tell it to put it there so you can open it up and verify that it's still doing its job.
Right. Because if you haven't verified your backup, you don't have a backup.
Mm-mm.
It's really that simple.
I relied on a tape drive once at work. And there was this beautiful, no, it was the worst experience with backups where I'd actually write the backup and then verify the backup. And there was something about doing the verification pass that would ruin the backup. And it wasn't until I needed it, and it didn't work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had an interesting experience the other day. I found my wife asked me about a program I had written for her decades ago. And I actually found the cassette tape I had saved it on.
Nice.
Well, what am I going to read that on?
On your computer. Audio.
Exactly.
With the audio jack.
On the tape recorder I don't have anymore. Actually, I do. But what I did was, for some reason, it wasn't a terribly big program, but it was important to her. I had actually printed out the source code.
Oh, man.
Which I still had.
And you took pictures with your phone of each page. Because you could have.
You could have,
and it might have worked.
This program is so old, we didn't have cell phones when I wrote it.
Oh, yeah.
That's how old it is.
If it was on tape, then
yeah.
I mean,
also I wrote it in fourth. But the point is,
yeah.
I had all the logic and I had all the program structure,
mm-hmm.
and I could recreate it for her without a problem.
Probably write it more efficient.
Well, it was pretty efficient.
Was it?
Yeah.
Good.
Well, it's fourth. It's hard to write a program that is inefficient in fourth.
True.
Yeah. True.
I can, but it was hard.
Yeah. No,
all right.
I agree with you there.
Yeah, back to the phones. Our next caller is Brian from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Brian.
Hi there. Just a quick question. What are your guys' thoughts about ad blocking software?
Yeah.
I have strong feelings about ad blocking.
Okay.
I love it. I will trust the ads and JavaScript content that is first party. But the thing with ad networks is ad networks sell access to other ad networks. And you have this web of distrust. So the more ads you have on your web page, I mean, aside from it being slower or buggy, the more likely is that third party, fourth party, fifth party ad is actually going to be serving up a virus. So to the best of my ability, I don't surf the internet unless I have some kind of ad blocker protection turned in. And my favorite one, on anything that runs Chrome, like Chrome, whether it's Brave or Vivaldi or Microsoft Edge, is called uBlock Origin. It's open source.
Yep.
It's free. And if you want to nerd out, you can dig into that and do all kinds
Beautiful.
Of stuff.
I'm running it right now. It is also my favorite. I agree with Chris, only 100%. It's the best I can do for him. So I agree. But and for me, it's hypocritical because I have ads on my websites. And I never get any money from them because I know everybody is using ad blockers. And that's fine. But the idea here is that Chris is right. When you get first party ads, they're usually fine. But nobody gets first party ads anymore. You're part of an ad network. And not only can those ads be inappropriate to your type of website, but worse, they can, you know, no matter how diligent the ad network is, and most of them are, but no matter how diligent they are, bad stuff can sneak through.
Turnpike, Highway 21, State Route 21.
All right.
Yeah, so for our money, it's uBlock Origin is the best one.
And I would even allow second party ads if I could, where it was only the most trusted providers,
right.
Something, but it's really not a setting that you can turn on.
Right.
And my experience is as soon as I'm on a computer where there's no ad blocking, the internet kind of stinks. It's so slow.
Mm-hmm.
For a while,
I feel bad.
YouTube has been cracking down on ad blockers, and for about 3 days, YouTube was the worst experience I've ever had because I had to turn off my ad blocker to get YouTube at all.
Yeah, yeah.
And that meant ads before, ads after, and interstitial ads right in the middle of what's going on. I don't like that. Luckily, uBlock Origin.
Yeah.
You have to uninstall uBlock Origin and then reinstall the latest version in order for it to work again. But at least at the moment, it is still working. So that's nice. That's very nice. And once again, YouTube is usable.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, I agree with you. Ad blockers have become necessary.
Security risk is too high for
exactly.
me.
Exactly. And when you run, one of the things I like about uBlock Origin is when you run it, it tells you how many ads it's blocking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've had sites where I go to and it says over 1,000.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they're not just ads, but they're also trackers and all that other stuff.
Little Lego pieces that make up the whole ecosystem of trying to sell you stuff.
And browsers like Brave have that all built in. Ish.
They do.
Ish.
They do, but...
Yeah.
I've tried that, and my experience is that uBlock Origin
is better. Yeah. I completely agree. But one of the things I do appreciate is the bragging that Brave does. When you start it up, it says,
hey, we saved you
70 million. This is in 40 million. That's and it's pretty cool. But I love uBlock Origin, and I run it on all my Chrome-like browsers.
Okay.
And there are sites you have to turn off because they simply will not work with it. You have to turn them off. And I just don't go to those sites anymore.
I find I don't go back to them, or I look for my own workaround.
Yep.
Because there are ways to block the ad blocker detection blocks.
Well put. And you can, if you're tech savvy, you can use things like Pi Hole, right? You create a Raspberry Pi, stick it on your network.
Absolutely.
And it blocks all the ads at the source of your network. You plug that right into your modem. I know they're not really modems anymore.
But,
shut up.
Yeah.
You plug it right into your modem and it blocks them right there. So you don't have to do anything else. And that's pretty cool, but if you're just an average user, something like uBlock Origin is really what you want. It's the letter U, the word block, and the word origin.
Yep.
So did that help you?
Appreciate it.
Yep.
You're welcome.
All right, thanks.
I like Pie Hole a lot. I like that strategy. Because the bottom line is that the content you don't want is coming from a named something on the internet.
Yep.
Chris Horn's superlegitads.com.
That's Shady Chris Horn.
Yes, right. That's the Shady Chorn. Oh, I could probably register that. And Pie Hole as a DNS provider, that's the thing that translates names of stuff on the internet to the address you would really go to, right? The numeric address that nobody pays attention to.
Right.
Yep. And Steve's pointing out that OpenDS has a OpenDNS has a free service that does basically the same thing that Pi-hole does, where it just has allow lists for stuff you want to trust and block lists for things that just, you know, shady Chris Horn. Let's just not go there. And it'll serve up an empty response. So the ad on the web page tries to run and fails.
Yep. Yeah. But for the average user.
Yeah. And you block origin. I mean, that's basically their strategy too, right? It's just great big lists of stuff that you don't want.
Yep. And they have multiple lists. And you, if you know what those lists do, you can pick and choose which list you use.
Yes.
So, you know, the average user is just going to install it and it runs and it blocks everything. But you may, you know, want certain ads from certain places. You can go into uBlock Origin and say, give me these, or, you know, don't use this list, or whatever you want to do.
So that is the thing I actually do. If I have a news site that I go to and they say, hey, please disable your ad blocker for that specific site, I will enable the things just enough so that they don't complain anymore.
Yeah.
And now we're both happy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's exactly right. And, you know, it's that same game of leapfrog we see in everything else. They figure out how that you're using a web blocker, an ad blocker, and they ask you to stop using it. And then, so the ad blockers change the way they work so that they aren't detected anymore. And then they figure out how to detect that, and it just goes on and on and on and on. It's a very...
game of leapfrog.
It's a game of leapfrog, and it's you know, like I said, I feel like a hypocrite about it because I do have ads on my website because my websites, and I run a lot of them, cost me a lot of money. I mean, you've seen Soundbite's website, which has over 1,100 old shows up there. That ain't free.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, are you saying that storage on the internet isn't free?
So, I know. Thank God you were sitting.
Yeah, really.
And what really seems to work is, you know, God bless the people who will donate directly to my website, directly to Soundbites or directly to the Security Tango if I've helped them. But, you know, if it weren't for that, I don't know that I could keep them running. It would it costs a lot of money.
I'm surprised that people don't have securitytango.com tattooed on their arm. Is something wrong? Oh, right. I got it tattooed right here.
Yeah. Here.
I think that's how useful it is. I think there are so many people.
Thank you.
That have saved their bacon because of that.
They just take it for granted.
Yeah.
Just like they take, you know, tuning in every Saturday that we're going to be here for them to get their answers to their computer questions.
Yeah, but my family's just happy to have me out of the house. I don't
know. We're performing a public service, really, for the Horn family.
For everybody.
At this point, yeah. All right, that music tells us that an entire hour of this show has magically gone by. But do not despair. There's a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. That's right. A whole nother hour of Dave Enright. Sorry about that. A whole nother hour of Chris Horn. Excellent. And a whole nother hour of Nick Francesco. Well, you get the bad with the good. And a whole nother hour of you. So you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. And of course, we will be here for another hour of Soundbites right here on the Truly Great and Truly Grateful to You, because we are solely member supported Jazz 90.1. Take a quick bio break. We'll see you on the other side.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Celebrating 50 years on the air in Rochester.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at my house, the bills come to Chris Horn.
Wonderful. I'll send mine to you, too. As long as you're getting them.
As long as your name is Chris Horn, I'll pay him.
Oh, there you go. And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free 800-790-0415. Researchers are issuing a dire warning of security and privacy concerns lurking within smart homes. Scientists were able to demonstrate a variety of security and privacy threats due to the local network interactions of the Internet of Things, or IoT devices and mobile apps. As smart homes continue to evolve, they encompass a wide array of consumer-focused IoT devices, including smartphones, smart TVs, virtual assistants, CCTV cameras. These devices come equipped with cameras, microphones, and various sensors that can perceive activities within our most intimate spaces, our homes. However, can we truly trust these devices to handle and safeguard the sensitive data they collect? Going right along with what we were talking about during the break. For the study, researchers delved into the intricacies of local network interactions among 93 IoT devices and mobile apps and were able to unveil numerous previously undisclosed security and privacy concerns with real-world implications. Contrary to the common perception that local networks are secure environments, the study highlights new threats linked to the inadvertent exposure of sensitive data by IoT devices within local networks using standard protocols like UPnP, Universal Plug and Play, or MDNS, Multicast DNS. These threats include the exposure of unique device names, UUIDs, universally unique identifiers, and even the geographic location of households. These can be exploited by companies without the user knowledge. The study underscores how local network protocols can serve as side channels to access data that are theoretically protected by the mobile app permissions, such as household locations. The implications of this research go beyond academia, emphasizing the need for manufacturers, software developers, IoT, and mobile platform operators and policymakers to make decisive action to enhance the privacy and security of smart home devices and households. Researchers have already responsibly disclosed these issues to vulnerable IoT device vendors and Google's Android security team, prompting security improvements in some of these products. So how smart is your home? And how secure is your home? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415.
I just saw a video where this guy had the Ring system.
Yep.
And somebody came up to the door, and they knock on it, and with the Ring system says, "Can I help you?" "Yeah, open up the door." And the guy goes, "No, I'm not opening the door. What do you want?" "Just open up the door." "And no, I'm not opening up the door. Go away or and call the police." Saul said he opens up the screen door and starts pushing on the front door. The guy inside goes, "I have a gun." The guy goes, "I don't care. I'm coming in." All of a sudden you hear pop, pop, pop.
Yep.
You see the guy running. He passes out in the driveway. Meanwhile, the guy's calling the police. "Please come to my house. The guy just tried to break in my house and I shot him."
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was an 82-year-old man inside.
Yep.
Well, I'll tell you, in the security space, we don't call it the Internet of Things.
What do we call it?
We call it the Internet of Bleep.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody gave me four of those little smart plugs.
Yeah.
They're still in the box 2 years later. No, thank you.
So here's the thing, is if you follow best practices, which most consumer hardware, and if you get your Wi-Fi and internet from Spectrum or Greenlight or somebody, and they're doing that for you. I don't know what practices they follow, but if you're running your own hardware at home, you can turn off the things that fundamentally make those little devices unsafe.
Right.
Right. Because, mm-hmm. like, you can imagine the Ring camera. This is why I thought of that. Ring camera or any of those other things where you're like, oh, I've got an app on my phone. I can check my doorbell or camera from the mm-hmm. internet. Well, maybe so can everybody else.
Right. Yep.
So what do you do to make yourself safe or safer from that? And you already mentioned the acronyms, the settings is on your router, on your Wi-Fi. You want to disable UPnP, which is Universal Plug and Play.
Right.
And then if it's an Apple device, I think they call it NAT-PNP. You don't see that as much.
Right.
Basically the way that these IoT devices would automatically make themselves available on the internet. And hopefully that's enough, because otherwise if you're running the hardware and you've got it connected to an app on your phone, well, it's going to the internet one way mm-hmm. or the other.
Right. And it's out there.
Well, those little smart plugs, I looked into them and I thought, great idea.
Yeah.
But with these particular ones, there's no app there's an app, but it doesn't let me do anything except, say, turn it on, turn it off, or whatever it does.
Yep.
It doesn't let me get into the guts and say, turn this off, don't do that.
Don't use this feature, use that feature.
So, no, I'm not using them.
Yeah.
I'm just not.
Yeah.
And then, do you know about Amazon Sidewalk? Amazon Sidewalk, Amazon devices like the Echo Dots and all of that stuff have their own wireless network, which works everywhere and all the time.
And with your neighbor's devices.
And with your neighbor's devices. It's a mesh network it's a shared network.
Good news.
That connects you with everybody else.
So, what a relief that is.
What a relief. So if I've got a smart speaker and you've got a smart speaker next door and the next person has a smart speaker and so on and so on, my whole street is one big mesh network that Amazon...
Well, doesn't that make us all smarter?
It makes us all smarter and safer and it's better. For everybody.
Does the marketing literature say that? I might have some doubts.
Make your teeth whiter.
It's possible that they're not 100% accurate about that.
Okay.
And it'll make your teeth whiter.
It'll make your teeth whiter and make you more attractive to whichever sex you want to be attractive to. So, there's just... You got to understand that most of the time... At the very least, there's a hidden agenda. Putting these things out for your benefit.
Yeah, like I think knowing what you're getting into, is the way to do it. And there are ways to secure yourself. Like there's a older school technology for doing little devices called Z-Wave and Zigbee that don't really pose the same threats that the IoT, Wi-Fi straight to the internet kinds of devices do. And those require like a hub. I want to say one of them is Samsung's. And there's a bunch of them. That's the stuff that you would buy at Lowe's or Home Depot if you need the hub. That's the purpose it serves, is to be that central place where they all connect to. And it's not a Wi-Fi mesh.
Right. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. Hi, Fred. What's up?
Hey, glad to hear you guys on the air.
Thank you.
A couple of things. Going back to the programming days, I programmed with Fortran and the IBM cards, and we would number the cards.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And then if you dropped them, you were safe.
Well, you were safe, but it was,
time-consuming.
When it's 2,000 cards.
And you numbered them by hand.
Yeah, it's...
No, you numbered them in the code.
You number them in the code. And I get that. And, all, and even if it's numbered, when you drop 2,000 or 3,000 cards, It's
a mess.
Get your heart moving.
Yeah, but when the compiler reads it, they don't have to be in order.
Well, that's true.
Yep.
Depends on the compiler, but, yeah.
Yeah. Couple questions. uBlock Origin.
Yep.
How do I install that on my phone?
It's an extension for your browser. Okay. And
I don't see that option.
Right. As far as I know, it's not available in any way on an Apple phone. And I suspect
Android phone.
Yeah, I think Android, if you can go to the App Store for your Chrome browser, and I think Nick can clarify that, I think it should work. I don't have an Android phone, so I haven't done that, but I don't see why it wouldn't work exactly the same.
I don't see it in Google Play.
No, you won't. Sadly, Google Chrome doesn't seem to be allowing much in the way of extensions for the Android app. I do know that Firefox on Android allows uBlock Origin.
Okay.
But
can you get Edge or Vivaldi or Brave on Android? You must be able to.
Yes.
I bet they would let you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they have Brave the same guts as Chrome.
Okay, Brave versus Firefox. Any opinions?
Brave was designed from the ground up to be more secure.
Yeah, my heart says Firefox, but Firefox is on the wane.
Mm-hmm.
And these days, unfortunately, I'm very sad to say this, I think you run into compatibility problems. Just Mozilla just doesn't have the funding.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. And a while ago, we talked about the new smart meters from RG&E.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And my place has that now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm supposed to be able to see my meter readings either through an app or through the web. And I don't see how to do that.
Well, they're still in the midst of setting it up. Matter of fact, I've got the smart meters in for the electric, but I'm still trying to get a hold of the phones because the folks called me about putting the device on my gas meter, and they just haven't, we haven't tied up yet. Every time I try calling, I'm put on infinite hold. My average wait time, I've been on there for up to 35 minutes, and I get frustrated and hang up.
Yeah.
But until they get everything in place, then yes, you will be able to go online and, through their app, be able to see your current charges.
Okay. Yeah, because my place is all electric, so I don't have to wait for the gas meters, but I guess I got to wait for RG&E to get everything together.
Yeah, because it is so much handier than going out there and trying to read those stupid little dials. Well, this one's going this way, this one's going this way. Now just go out there and read a number, write it down, and off you go.
Yep.
Yeah, mine is in the, I'm in an apartment, so it's in the
basement.
Basement, and don't always have access to that. So I'm looking if I can get that just to kind of get an idea what I'm running, how much I'm running prime time or non-peak hours.
Yeah, like I say, once they get this all in place, and like anything else, this new technology just takes time. And, I mean, they're doing a massive effort to try to get everybody, converted, but I don't think they're planning on really having it all wrapped up until next year.
Oh, okay. So maybe I was just jumping the gun.
Oh, yeah, you and me both.
Be a little patient. You'll get there.
Yeah.
Or you could do us all a favor and stay on hold for a couple of days and get an answer from them and then call us back.
Well, one of the interesting things with my phone is I can call them and then I can call them and then I can call them and I can be on hold three times at once. And
nice.
Yep.
Somebody, someplace, one of those places, somebody's got to answer.
Yeah, well, you could win radio contests that way, too.
Exactly.
Win some tickets.
Yep.
All right, Fred.
Guys, thanks for the help.
Yep.
Thanks, Fred.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I set up a pet project for myself that I have completely failed to follow through on. I'm sure no one has ever had that experience.
Yeah.
But I bought some of those little USB software-defined radios.
Oh, yeah.
And some antennas.
SDRs.
SDRs with the intent of doing the scanning and then finding weather stations in my area. And if we had the smart meters, I would love to be able to pick up the telemetry and say, oh, yeah, look at that. We really are using power. Oh, look, this is what the neighbor's weather station says, because all that stuff is just
there.
Broadcast.
Once it's out on the air, yeah, it's there.
Just, it's just broadcast.
And the air, the STRs, like you say, they're no bigger than that little dongle right there.
Yeah.
You hook them up, throw a wire, even just throw a wire out the window. You know, it's just got to be a thin wire, right, and make it about, I believe it's got to be 34 feet long for the wavelength, and it'll scan everything. You know, I mean, whether it's aviation or the police bands or ham radio, it's all out. If it's on an airwave, you can scan it and listen in. You can't talk, of course.
I got to the point of like, all right, I need to try some of the software part of this to do the scanning. And I realized I have no clue how anything works.
Yeah, welcome to that club.
Frequency range. Okay. And then they list all the standards. It's, you know, this is ABC, this is XYZ, and I don't know what any of
them. The best way to find out what's on what they call.
You made a mistake. You've now got Dave talking about radio. We've only got half an hour left.
No, I'll make this short and sweet. No, you can go to the ARRL, and they have what they call the band plan. You can look that up, and that will tell you from one end of the spectrum to the other what's on what frequencies,
right,
and the gentleman's agreements to use, say, this part for this, this part for that.
This is what AM means. This is what FM means.
Yeah, and what's on within that scope of bands or, you know, frequencies. So, if you go to the ARRL website, it will and look up the band plan.
What I think what I did was I picked software to use that was for experts, and it didn't have a I have no idea how this works mode. I should look for a different program.
Well, you can. The other thing, too, though, is if you have an SDR, you can also go to the web and do a search for SDR web pages. And people have them already set up that you can put in frequencies and listen to any frequency that you want, whether it's the Marine band or the military or...
Dave, that would invalidate the money I've already thrown down this hole.
An SDR is only 25 bucks?
They're pretty cheap. They're really cheap.
Yeah, 25 bucks. But it is still fun to have one and set it up on a computer and be able to dial around.
Yeah.
But to see where people are listening... The websites will point you into those directions.
Well, it's unfortunate that Steve isn't here because I had an RC plane story too. But I'll save that for the next time I see him.
Yeah.
Well, I thought it wasn't. You know what's worse than you were talking about punch cards? I'll never forget this. But we were I was working in the computer room, and you know we'd get the cards in, you know, and or they'd have to repunch a bunch of them and everything else. So every so often, they'd have to empty this one machine that did all the punching, and they put it in this bucket. Well, the guy also wanted to clean out some of the drawers and all that for the because it was getting dusty in there.
Sure.
So he set the shop vac up on this stool. And it had one of those diverters on the shop vac that blew the air back down.
Uh-huh.
So he goes starting to vacuum out all the dust and all that. Meanwhile, the nozzle is pointing down at all these little tabs.
The hanging from chads. The chads from the...
And it was blowing over the computer room.
That's hysterical.
I swear.
It's a nightmare.
6 months later, we're still finding chads here and there, stuck in the machines all over the place.
I bet. You should have a ticker tape parade with that stuff. That's,
Oh, that
if I was that guy, I would just quit and say, well, this job's done. I'm out.
There's one guy that was going right by, and he was sitting there looking and laughing his butt off.
Yeah.
Because here it's snowing all these chads.
That's funny. We had a computer that was at the bank. We had a computer that was in a locked closet, doing some server stuff, and every day at 3 a.m. it would go offline.
Oh.
Every day at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
So one day I was there all night waiting, you know, I came in about 2 and I went upstairs and watched. 3 a.m., one of the cleaning people unlocks the door. Where she got that key, I'll never know because she wasn't supposed to have it.
Yeah.
Unplugged the computer, plugged her vacuum cleaner in, vacuumed, unplugged her vacuum cleaner, plugged the computer back in, and walked away.
And really? At 3 o'clock, I'm sure you were in the just most chipper mood to have the nice conversation.
Exactly. I was very polite to that lady. I was. I've always believed the best way to get ahead is to have low friends and high friends in low places.
Yep.
and so, yeah. But I did explain to her that she, you know, there's a lot of plugs in this room. Why are you using this one?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And A, why do you even have that key? Give it to me. Give it to me. You are not supposed to have that key.
Right. Good news. You're doing a great job. Bad news.
You're doing too good a job.
Stop.
Yeah, please stop. So, yeah. But look, one of the most difficult things for any tech to fix are intermittent problems. Because,
mm-hmm.
A, they're never going to happen when you're there. And B, they can be caused by any one of a million different things. It's like taking your car to the garage and it doesn't make that noise now.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's turn that into some helpful advice because as a techie kind of person, everybody in my life, that's not fair, most people in my life tend to come to me with computer questions.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's relevant. It's not the intermittent problem that's necessarily the hard thing. It's the, I clicked on the thing and it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Right? It's the, how do you learn to be specific about asking for help? It's like going to the auto mechanic and saying that it's making a noise. I'm going to need more than that.
Yep.
What part of the car?
I had a friend who brought her car in to a garage. She had just moved into town. She brought into her car into a garage. I was with her. And the guy said, what's going on? And she described down to the nut and bolt what the problem was. And the guy just looked at her and he said, marry me.
I would have too, right? Right? So let's say your computer's doing something that confuses you and you don't like.
Mm-hmm.
If you take a movie of that with your phone, no one is going to complain. No one's going to say, oh, you used your phone to take a movie? And no, you captured what the exact problem was. Anybody in a position to help you is actually going to be able to help you.
Yep, yep.
Versus I clicked on the thing and it flashed a window and I didn't like it.
Like, yeah. The other problem is, what were you doing? Nothing.
Mm.
Then you don't have a problem because nothing caused it and therefore nothing happened.
Yeah.
You did something. What did you do?
Right.
I didn't say you did something wrong. I said you did something. So what did you do? And that will lead us on. But the taking, you know, everybody's carrying documentary devices with them now all the time.
Yeah.
Use them.
Yeah. I mean, back in the day, I can remember I had to drive all the way back out to Brockport because this guy came in to pick up the computer. We sent it home for it. It was working fine. He calls us. This darn thing ain't working.
Oh.
Well, did you turn the red switch back on? All the switches are on. So we went back out there. He had one of those console bars, turned all that on. We went over to the side of the computer because it was a big old IBM with the dual 5 1/4.
Yeah.
Flipped on the power switch. Everything came up and he's sitting there.
Yep.
Didn't know what to say.
Yeah.
And we just walked out.
Yep. All right, we are going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, probably Chris Horn, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just a couple of minutes, so don't go too far.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm going to respond to Chris Horn for the next 23 minutes.
Excellent. Hold on. Let me write that down. Chris, what was it? And we are Soundbites. And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Android 14 has this horrible storage bug for upgrading users. If you have multiple user accounts on your device, upgrading to Android 14 can actually lock you out of the device's local storage, which creates an incredible number of problems that are all pretty similar to getting hit with device encrypting ransomware malware. The issue tracker bug has been kicked up from a mid-level P2 priority to P0, which is the highest priority on the issue tracker, and Google is looking into the matter. The highlights are that Google says the bug affects devices with multiple Android users, not multiple Google accounts. So if you're the only user of the phone,
you're good.
Yeah,
you're good. If you've got work profiles under one user, you're still good. It's the number of actual users. If you have multiple users, you'll have a user switcher at the bottom of the quick settings. Multiple users are rare, but they all have separate data, separate apps, separate Google accounts. Child users are the most probable uses
okay.
of this. So, yeah, you know, my
that
kid
was my question. Why would you do this?
Yeah, you know, your kid's still too young to have a phone, but
sure.
Sometimes you need that little babysitter.
Yeah,
here, take this. So the most popular reason to use that feature, you can lock kids out of things, like purchasing apps. So I can say, okay, this new user cannot do these three things.
Yeah, leave the Amazon app
off. Right. So shipping a Google Play system update as a quick Band-Aid is an interesting solution. But as Google Post suggests, this doesn't mean the problem is fixed. Play system updates allow Google to update core system components via the Play Store, but they're not really meant for critical fixes. The big problem is that the Play system updates don't aggressively apply themselves or even let you know that they have been downloaded. They already left the barn anyway. Likely most Pixel phones have automatically applied the nearly 13-day-old update by now. Pixel phones get updates immediately from Google without having to go through the filter of the manufacturer and the carrier, which is one of the reasons I like Pixel phones. It's very much like the Apple phones. They own the entire ecosystem, so it's easy to do things. Users can force the Play system updates to happen themselves by going to the system settings, then security and privacy, then system and updates, then Google Play system update. If you have an update, you'll be prompted to reboot the phone. Also note that this differs from the usual OS update checker location. It would be great to have a single location for OS updates, Google Play system mainline updates, and app updates, but they're scattered everywhere and give conflicting up-to-date messages. Finally, it's good news that Apple has a solution in the works for people who have already been locked out of their devices. A factory reset has always been a solution that fixes the problem, but that would also erase all of your data, and some people understandably don't want to do that. For people stuck in a pixel-less starting boot loop, Google sounds a bit sketchier, with Google planning a fix that will recover some data. How's your Pixel phone? Give us a call, if you can. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. You know, it used to be that your phone was your phone, and you made calls with it, and it just worked.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started, and it was stuck on a wall. And then we started carrying them around, but they still just made calls. Then we started getting apps on them. And I'm blaming Steve Jobs, frankly, for this. You get music on it. Now you get video on it. You can do everything on it. Now it's a computer you carry in your pocket, which means all the problems people have with computers, they now have with their phones.
Mm-hmm.
all the same interoperability issues when you can get apps, programs, they're programs, from more than one person, you are going to suddenly run into interoperability problems. You just have to be aware that that's happening, and you have to be aware that it's going to happen, and you have to...
Everywhere you put a computer, you're bringing with you the problems that computers have.
That's exactly right. And you can't say, well, it's just a phone, because it isn't anymore. It's a computer that also makes phone calls, not that anybody makes phone calls anymore.
I mean, I've already got a lot of problems. I don't...
You don't need more.
Yeah.
You're just in your head. You don't even have to go outside your head for that. I get it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bill from Greece, New York. Hi, Bill. What's up?
Well, now that Chris is there, I guess I can say welcome, gentlemen.
Yes, you can.
Let's hang up on this one.
I have a 5-year-old computer with a switch and 5 hard drives, and I've got 3 Linux distributions.
Nice.
But for quite a while, I can only download a Linux distribution that uses the XFCE desktop.
Okay.
If I try GNOME or if I try KDE, the download freezes. I've taken it to 4 shops in Rochester, and they all say, we don't feel we're competent enough to help you. Do you know of a repair service that I could take the computer to that is knowledgeable in Linux and Windows?
Well, if you're having problems downloading...
It's not downloading, it's installing.
Oh, it's installing.
Yeah, I used the wrong word.
Yeah, okay. Oh, that makes a lot more sense. So it's... What are the distributions of Linux you're trying?
Oh, all of them. I'm up to 307 right now.
Nice. Nice.
Are these all on separate hard drives?
So what you're...
I've got 3 hard drives, and I keep switching distributions.
So what you're saying is you can download any distribution.
Yeah.
But if you install it and it's not running XFCE,
right,
it won't run.
It freezes. Now, to compound the problem, if I install it in a VM... device, it installs and works fine.
Yeah, I think I know where we're going here.
Yeah, go ahead.
To me, it sounds like you have a video problem. But you've got a driver issue. What kind of video card do you have in it?
It's a Radeon.
All right, so I think that whatever the current generation Radeon drivers are, whatever each one of those distributions, they don't really vary a whole lot. Right. You can vary in version, but if you're trying to install the current install for whatever distribution, you're going to wind up trying to get that same Radeon driver. And XFCE, that's the low spec, the low power graphics. It's not trying to do anything fancy, but GNOME is, right?
Yep.
And KDE,
GNOME and KDE,
same thing, right?
Exactly. They want more power.
The GPU stuff to try and make it look pretty. And the problem you're running into, I think, is your Radeon drivers. I wonder if you can find a mode to install GNOME or KDE that is a, don't do the GPU stuff. Because that might be a thing. It depends on the distribution. You can also try and reboot Linux into like a safe driver mode, and it'll refuse to load the Radeon drivers. And I bet you'd find that GNOME and KDE each work in that situation, because they should intelligently say, okay, I don't have these drivers, I'm not going to try and do the fancy graphic stuff, right?
Could I update the drivers?
And then like the other thing to try is to, before you do anything with GNOME or KDE, just try and find the latest Radeon drivers from AMD. And you might be able to choose, like, it's been a while since I did Radeon on Linux. There might be open source drivers, and there might be drivers specifically from AMD. And there might also be much newer drivers or slightly older drivers. That's the kind of thing is...
You don't know until you go looking.
They're periodically flaky enough.
Yep.
Where especially the Ubuntu, Debian, Mint flavors, they give you some choices in terms of what driver you're running.
What if I threw in a new graphic card?
that could be completely different. And if it's another Radeon, it could be exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It could be that the problem is your card. It does. It may be that it's got a problem with the GPU. Certainly another graphics card would not necessarily have the same problem. And certainly if you use a non-Radeon card, you may be in better shape.
Well, I don't want to go to NVIDIA and Linux.
No, I understand that. I'm running NVIDIA and Linux right now, too, but I'm also running...
Is there a repair place in Rochester I could take this to?
I don't know if anybody, maybe somebody else does, somebody in the chat maybe, or whatever. If you are a shop that handles Linux machines, give us a call. But I don't know of one off the top of my head that is that versed in Linux specifically.
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah. No.
Okay.
Try the Yellow Pages and see if anybody...
Oh, I have been through Yelp, and I have been through this and that. I talked to one guy online that's in Rochester. He says, I can't fix your computer, but I can make you one for $1,400, but I can't tell you if it'll work.
Great.
Thank you so much for that, sir.
Right. About as helpful as a screen door in a submarine.
And then I checked his prices of his components on Amazon, and I could save about $400 buying the components off Amazon. I said, can I buy the components from Amazon? And he says, yes, but then I have to charge you $250 an hour.
Yep, and it's going to take 5 hours.
Yeah, I think it comes down to picking a different Radeon driver. And you might start by going to your package manager, depending on your distro. That's a different thing. And uninstalling the Radeon drivers while you're an XFCE. Just uninstall anything Radeon AMD. Well, not AMD, but anything Radeon. And then see where you can get.
One thing I'd like to back up for a minute.
Sure.
The reason that gentleman is saying that he's going to charge you that much, and me being a former shop owner, is people would bring stuff in and want me to install it. All right, I'll go ahead and install it and get it operating. But if that thing breaks, which I had one gentleman do, came back to me and wanted me to replace the CD-ROM drive. I go, well, you didn't buy it from me. Well, you all work from the same companies. No.
Yeah.
You buy it. If you buy it from me, you got the full year guarantee. If you buy it online, you get what you get.
Yep. Yeah, that's true. But yeah, there are a set of Radeon drivers for Xserve, which is the graphics front end.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if there's if you're using something. One of the newer distributions that uses Wayland.
I tried Wayland. It didn't work.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you said how many hard drives do you have?
I've got, well, actually got five. Two are for Windows and three are for Linux.
Right. Let's see if you could find one and just wipe it to start fresh.
Oh, I've done that.
Yeah.
Well, he's clearly not using the same drivers for each thing because he's installing them on different hard drives.
But when I use VMware, it installs. Isn't it using the same driver?
No.
Well, no.
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 That's the point. No, it is not.
That's how I knew it was the driver.
That's why I was
wondering
whether there's a glitch there in one of the installs that it's not remembering that it's a different drive or, you know, drivers.
But I've tried many.
Yeah. Oh, no, I hear you. I hear you.
You know, I had an NVIDIA card that was great. Until I tried to play Minecraft, and then the whole system would crash. All different games, and that when it came to Minecraft, it would crash. Sometimes there's just a bug in the hardware, and a combination that you're not going to get past.
Trying
a different card really sounds like a great idea, especially if you do it on a system and don't change anything else. Just change that one variable and see what happens.
Yeah, card is easy to pop in and out.
Right. The other thing you might try for yourself, though, before you go out and buy a new card, is if you go to AMD's website, you can download the latest Radeon software for the Ubuntu or Arhel.
Arhel?
Excuse me. The Red Hat...
I just really liked that. I really.
What's the
It's Red Hat Enterprise Linux.
Enterprise Linux. Thank you very much.
Nobody listening to this is going to be using Red Hat. It's not free.
Would this work right. if I download the drivers while I was in the Windows distribution?
Well, you can put them on a thumb drive and bring them over that way. But you can always, on any Linux, you can boot into just the command line. No graphics.
They usually call it single user mode. And they,
yeah.
just like Windows, I think most of them offer like a safe mode kind of experience. Yeah.
But if you go into direct command line mode, you can then, you know, first go into something that works and download the latest driver, stick it on a thumb drive, bring it over, and you can download, you can pull it over in command line and then install it using apt or dpackage or whatever it is you use, and then see if that works.
But then every time I load a new distro, I've got to do that.
No, I think step one is figure out if it's the drivers for the video
That's
card
what I'm saying.
Or the
it's...
video card. And you should just stay in XFCE and install the latest AMD stuff. And if that doesn't work, then switch the video card and see what happens then.
Okay, well, you guys have given me more than I've gotten from the local people.
Well, that's why we're here.
Yeah, I really appreciate it.
And we are the local people.
Yep.
All right, thanks.
Oh, thank you.
Bye-bye. Yeah, when you get into that stuff, look, for those of you who are not Linux conversant, there are multiple versions of Linux. Many of them are the same under the hood, but the front end is different. So XFCE is my favorite desktop. But you can also get GNOME, and you can get KDE, and you can get Enlightenment. And you can, there's 50 of them, and they all look different. Underneath the hood, they're all still Linux. But
they're still going to run Chrome or Firefox or whatever else.
Right.
The programs run all the same. It's just the trappings are a little bit different.
Right. It's the prettification of it. You know, how pretty does it look, and can you do all that other stuff? So
and the last caller's experience is really unusual these days.
Yeah.
The kind of what my GPU drive or something is just weird.
Right. And that's why I'm thinking thank you. And that's why I'm thinking you could be right. It's probably the card. Not being able to do certain things that maybe Windows doesn't bother with either.
If we want to claim success so that we can sleep at night, say, yep, hardware's bad.
Exactly. Idea is to get them off the phone.
It might not be, but ideally it's just something weird with the drivers and the card, because I bet your card is actually fine.
Yeah, it's probably fine. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dwayne from Rochester, New York. Hi, Dwayne, what's up?
Hey, appreciate having guys that could actually speak from experience and punching programs on the punch cards.
Yep, it's been a while. That's, you know...
Nobody says it's the good old days, though.
You're right. They're just the old days.
Well, I'll tell you a horror story that I witnessed in the first computing class at university. The professor on the first day said, okay, we're going to be using Fortran, and your first assignment I'm going to hand out to you is a complete program in Fortran, and all you guys have to do is go to the computing center, punch this into punch cards and hand it in. And I don't want you to try to program. All I want you to do is to learn how to punch a program, hand it in, and get your printout and turn it in.
Sure.
So don't do any modifications. Here's the program. So that afternoon, everyone walks over to the programming site, and they get on the card punches, and they punch it in, and they take their deck over and hand it in to the operator at the card reader. And one of the people, it reads a couple of cards in, and it fails, and he gets handed the card deck back. And this happens a couple of times. And finally, the operator at the card reader says, I want to look at these cards. So he looks at them, and he figures out that what the person was doing was he was exactly entering the program as the instructor had given it to him.
Mm-hmm.
And the instructor had printed his zeros with a slash through them.
Oh, no.
So what the person was doing was typing in the zero, pressing the backspace key on the card punch,
zero,
and then putting in a slash, which, of course, for that column in the card is an illegal punch.
Right.
And so every one of the cards that he did that with, the card reader failed at and spit it out.
Sure.
And it took the operator to hold the card up to the light and say, wait a minute, this is an invalid character in this row, and all of the cards are invalid, and hand them back to the person and say, okay, well, you know, the purpose of this assignment was satisfied because this person learned that you do not press backspace on a card punch.
If I was the professor, I would have given that student extra credit because their attention to detail was exemplar.
Mm-hmm. And then I would have gone over to the data center and shaken the hand of the operator.
That's amazing.
Exactly. But, I mean, that was well worth the effort, and for the person at the reader, it was well worth the diagnosis. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Pay attention.
Yep, that's wonderful. Great story. Thanks.
Just wanted to share it. Have a
appreciate
good
it. Thank
Thanks.
You very much. Yeah, yep. And that goes back to if you had said to that person, what did you do different?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
So they didn't know.
It looks the same.
It looks the same. It makes sense. And yeah, there was a point where people would, because.
Steve says, technically correct, the best kind of correct.
Exactly. I've always had a problem with sans serif fonts. I'm sorry. I know that people love sans serif fonts because it's just so modern.
Nick and I can't be friends anymore.
I'm sorry. I apologize. I once talked to the guy who was the head of the printing department at RIT, and he looked at me and just the day I met him, he looked at me and said, serif or sans serif?
Oh,
I said, serif.
Yeah.
He said, you just passed all my courses. The problem with most...
Times Roman.
The problem with most sans serif fonts, the ones without the little curly Qs at the tops and bottoms of letters, is that L's look like ones and O's look like zeros, and there's no difference between any of them. And back in the day, when you were programming, it made it...
All of those details really matter.
They all matter. And if you had a serif font where an L did not look like a 1 and a 0 did not look like an O, you could work. But everybody used sans serif fonts for everything because they were modern. And and consequently, you'd look at a program and go, I don't know what I'm looking at.
Yeah.
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 And that bothered
caused
me.
Errors.
It always bothered me.
It caused errors.
It caused errors. And so they started using the slash in the O, in the zero, to make it separate from an O. So you could tell the difference between a zero and O. It didn't help with ones and L's, but it did help with
Or vertical pipes, right? Those look like ones in some of the fonts.
That's exactly right. Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah.
So, I'm a huge fan of serif fonts because they're much less confusing.
If I knew somebody that was using a monospaced version of Comic Sans called Comic Code, a good friend of mine, we work together, he always comes up with that font, like, oh, you're going to do some programming? Let's do it on my screen. And then he brings up that font. I'm like, I think you're telling me you don't want to work with this. You don't want to work together. That's why you're bringing up that font, because... It's just as cringy as you can imagine. And he
loves
it.
However, there have been studies that say people who are severely dyslexic have less problem reading when it's in Comic Sans. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? All right. That music tells us that we are done for another week. I can hear a huge sigh of relief going out across the internet right now. But we're definitely done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Chris Horn, who stepped in as Steve Ray, one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Southwest. Chris has done a great job. Thank you very much.
I've never heard. Can I get a recording of this?
No, sorry, no. I'll deny it to my dying day. I'm Nick Francesco, and we want to thank all of you. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. I have no idea what you're trying to tell me.
Turn your clocks back, folks.
Oh, yeah, turn your clocks back, because your computer theoretically will do it for you. Listen, we're done. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?